years ago, I did a class, some of you were in it, about systems with somebody who helps businesses set up their systems, and that was more about looking at the things you do every day and systematizing it so that instead of kind of like reinventing the wheel every time you go to ship and you have to find your labels and you have to find your envelopes and every time it's a mess, she's talking about systematizing it, which we can get into that if you guys would like to, but I'm was really thinking more about all the structures that keep our business a business and that keep us thinking logically and kind of making sound business decisions, because it's very, very easy to get distracted by trying to find new buyers or trying to come up with new product ideas or trying out new things, which is all very good. Experimentation is great as long as you have a base to fall back on. Like, you have your way that you know that people can come to your site, end up finding out what you're selling, where your shop is, clicking through and buying it. So that's what we're going to talk about. The first half, we're going to talk about getting those set up, kind of, in case you are just getting started and you're coming from one direction or another direction, or maybe you've never set up these systems at all. And the second half, really, like the second through fourth of the class, we're going to talk about how to do a systems check and see, like, is this working for me? Is this just something that I kind of, like, threw together because this other thing came up, and is this really what I want? And so, you know, the reason why I've been thinking about all this is, A, because we're about to get into, like, talking way more about marketing, but also because, like, over the next few months, I mean, but also because I have been looking at, I got a few surprisingly large wholesale orders, and I was looking at how my system for making the yarn, telling them when the yarn would be ready, getting the yarn to them, how that actually worked, and how I had actually just created a wholesale system based on what my retail system worked like, and that didn't work so well. And I was also looking at my streams of income, and does this make sense? You know, I was doing it like this because I had this one opportunity, but do I need to keep doing it like this, or would I rather do it like this, and what would the numbers look like? So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I change everything in my business every year. You might have the exact same business that you meant to have and you started it 5 years ago and you love the way it is. If that's the case, that's perfect. But usually we change, we start offering new products, we start talking to a different group of people, and our systems stay the same. Like, the behind-the-scenes structure stays the same even if it's no longer serving us. So we're going to talk about checking all that out. Ooh, I'm going to take a sip of my tea first. So when you're getting started, and even though like the vast majority of you are already started, this still might apply. But if you're getting started, it's really easy to focus on the outward signs of your business, the website, the Twitter stream, like the shell, the outward shell of it. But in order to actually have a business and to make money, you need the three pieces on the inside of it. You need a product to sell. It's like, duh. A way to make that product effectively and profitably. And the third thing is, you need a way to take the money. Now, that sounds like straightforward, right? But so many people, that's their question is, well, how do I start a business? Well, do you have a product? Do you know how you're going to make that product? And how are you going to exchange it for money? I don't know if you guys just heard that. It was my husband's very weird timer. To say that the beans are done cooking. So that way that you take the money could be in person, like in a shop, or it could be online on your website. I think a lot of people let that aspect of it really tie them up in knots. What should I do? What should I do next? Oh, no. Really? Like, just find one person who wants to buy your product and then try it. That's what I wanted to say before we get into, like, talking about the structure, is that you will build the kind of system that works best for your business, but you have to start somewhere. So start. Make a product, find a person who wants to buy it, and sell it to them. Then you can think about, how do I want to make more than one of these at a time? How do I want to sell more than one of these at a time? Maybe a craft show, maybe a real live shop, maybe a website. But you have to just start with making it and then selling it. My grandma actually makes a lot of handbags and sells them in shops all over her little town in Middle Tennessee. And she started just by making some, and I said, these are great, you should sell them. And she's like, oh, no, website, email. I mean, she doesn't ever even check her email. So I was like, no, you have friends that own shops. Why don't you just take them in? And sure enough, she started selling them at a salon, and they did great. So, like, she doesn't even think of herself as having a business, but she has these three things, the product, the way to make the product, and the way to take the money. So she totally has a business. So it doesn't have to be a big, scary thing. Start first, and then look at your system. So the product to sell. Most of us know right away what we want to sell, right? You have something in mind that you make or that you want to make. And but to see if this is really working for you, you might want to rethink what you know about it. For starters, is that product and the way that you'll make it sustainable? And what I mean by sustainable is, like, can you continue to make it over time for a long time? For example, spinning yarn is really, really hard on my wrists. I've known since I started selling hand-spun yarn that I cannot continue to sell hand-spun yarn for my entire life. I mean, I'm about to be 30, and I already, my wrists, when I spin too long, feel like I have carpal tunnel. If I, you know, force myself to spin 5 skeins a day, 7 days a week, I would definitely have carpal tunnel already. So I need to find other products that are easier on my hands and my body and also have a bigger profit margin to sell. So then the next question is that profitable? Can you buy the materials at a low enough price that when you added with their time, you can still make a profit on it? And I'm scrolling down. And then there's the question of, is there some other aspect of that thing that you could sell? So if you're selling yarn, could you add patterns and sell kits? If you're selling paintings, could you get them printed on cards or sell them as prints? And then there's the production question. And this is where we're going to get into that picture that I shared on the forum. If you haven't gone to the forum, look at that post that says, like, systems. Because the system around production here is one that lots of us don't think about until we have a big order to fill or until we start selling at such a high rate that we're like, crap, it takes me forever to make this. But if you can think through your production system kind of from the beginning, you can plan a more sustainable, more enjoyable business for your life. And what I mean by this is you start with, we can start from a few different places. I like to start with the amount of money that I want to make and then work backwards from there. So if I wanted to sell, but in my example on the forum is $2,000 worth of yarn. No, I wanted to make $2,000 worth of yarn. However, I have to buy my supplies, and they're about half of my total. My markup is like around 2 to 3 times. So then I really have to sell $4,000 worth of products because $2,000 of that is going to go to buy the product to make it. So in order to have $2,000, I have to actually make $4,000. And then how does that $2,000 break up? And you can see in this picture, and do you guys need me to share the link or can somebody share it in the chat room? I'm going to take a little breath here and check the chat room. For some reason, it won't scroll for me. Okay, so this is the... I can't find the link to it. Okay, so it's here. And I took this picture and I shared it with you guys because I love and trust you. There you go. Just a link to it. Okay, great. Yes. So that is my math that I literally did the other day. If I wanted to make $2,000 in wholesale orders, I know what 80 skeins of alpaca would be, 100 skeins of banana, 100 skeins of wool. So I added those all up to get the 4,000, and then I had to do the math. And by math, I mean break it down even further. So if you have to sell 80 skeins of alpaca in a month, how many would I actually have to dye? And 53 skeins of hand-spun is how much, I mean, obviously I'd have to spend 53 skeins of hand-spun, but what is that in a week, and then what is that in a day? And then based on what I know about my own production capacity, is that doable? And, of course, when you're thinking about production, the fact is you aren't able to produce product 8 hours a day, 5 or 7 days a week, because you have other stuff in your business you have to do. Like, you have to label the product, you have to, for the yarn, you have to skein it, you have to wash it, you have to dry it. For your, I don't know what else you guys make. For your other products, you have to label them, you have to package them, you have to ship them, you have to do things like answer people's emails, reply when they make the order and let them know when they're going to get it. And then there's the whole side of things, which we're going to get into in a minute, of how you actually make it available for sale, where you take the picture and you write the description. And so your production capacity is actually a much smaller part of your total working day than what you think when you first start. And you think, well, I'll just make yarn 8 hours a day. But in fact, if you're going to work 8 hours a day, maybe only 3 or 4 of those is making the product and the rest are making all of the rest of the business work. So that's an overview of, like, your production system. And then we're going to talk a little more about, like, streamlining that in the next section where you do a production checkup. So then the next aspect of your business is how to make money. And, like, it sounds really obvious, but I'm really surprised by how many really, you might call them famous, like, crafty, creative-type people have these huge audiences, and they don't have any way of – the icky internet marketing word is monetizing the audience. They don't have any way of actually making money. They produce this great, great content for free. People love them. People flock to them, and yet they don't if they didn't start out with anything to sell, when they start selling it later, the people often are, like, icked out by it. They're used to getting things for free. They don't want to buy anything now, and they don't make the connection between this person who's giving me all this great free stuff also wants me to buy something from their shop. So if you started that way, if you built an audience, and then you, whether it's with a podcast or a popular Twitter presence or a popular blog, you've got to shift some way in order to making people understand that you're there because you have a product to sell, because you have a business. And, of course, the people, the buyers, don't much care that you have a business, right? They want to know what is it that will interest them. So instead of just creating free content that people love to consume, you need to start creating things for them to consume that are around also buying your product. And it's kind of a I'm talking about it in vague terms because it can go so many different ways for so many different kind of businesses. So really the main question here is it obvious how they can buy your thing? I think for almost all of you, it's really obvious when I go to your website that you have something for sale. But the question is it being hidden somewhere else, like in your sidebar amongst a bunch of other buttons and you don't know, like people don't know what it is you want them to click on? Or perhaps your popular thing, like your popular blog or podcast or Twitter stream is like has higher, it's more obvious when you go to their site than the thing is that you're selling. So that's what this system is about, your way to make money, is actually making it really easy, really obvious that you sell something, and that's why you're there, and that's why they're there. And this can take a bunch of different this can look a bunch of different ways. For example, if you're only selling in shops or at craft shows, then the thing you want the person to do is to come to your craft show. And this starts to get into what I was saying in the forum about the customer path. When you think about, is it obvious the way that I make money? Is it obvious for people to give me money? You want to think about what you want the customer to do as soon as you land to your site. And a lot of people, when I ask them, what do you want somebody to do when they come to your site, they say, oh, I want them to read my blog. Well, but do you really, or do you want them to buy something? If you sell something, they have to read your blog first. Like I do these 2-day explorations, which I just did one these last 2 days, where I go really, really deep in someone's business. We talk about how the right people think, the language they use. I help them look at their Google Analytics to figure out where the people are coming from. It's like this crazy intense thing. I don't want people to buy that until I already know them and they know me and we like each other. So I actually do want them to read my blog or read my newsletter before they buy that thing because they have to spend so much time with me that I don't want just anyone to buy it. But if you're selling something in your Etsy shop, you actually, reading your blog is just a distraction. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't have a blog because your blog can educate the people who are coming by to read it about what you sell. But that's probably not your first priority, is that they read it and make friends. And if you disagree, I would like to hear it. We can talk about this in the forum more later. I lost my place in my notes because I got excited about that. Oh, so this system, like to set it up really quickly, you want to just make sure that the person has all the information. Well, first, that it's obvious how they would buy the thing. There's a big buy button. There's a big shop here button. It's at the top of your page. It's very obvious. In a post where you talk about something you have for sale, it's obvious that the thing is for sale. And a great example of this is actually our Amy. In her blog post where she talks about a painting she's finished, there's a buy button in that very blog post. It doesn't say like, oh, you can go over here. Like, you can just click right from the blog post and buy it. If I'm not mistaken, it used to be like that. So once it's obvious, then you want to make sure they have all the information, and then you want to make it super clear what to do next. And I know I've said that a lot, but, like, you want to make it clear what they do when they land on your website. You want to make it clear what to do after they've read the description. You want to make it clear what they do every step. That's that customer path thing. And that is how people end up giving you money, is if they know how to give you money. So if you are just starting out, these kind of systems, knowing what you're going to make and how you're going to make it and how people are going to give it give you money for it, that kind of takes a while to get set up, and that's okay. You can guess at first what these things are going to be. Like, until you've hand-spun 500 skeins, you don't know how long it will take you to spin, 10. So it's all right if that takes you a while to figure out. You're not supposed to have the answers before you get started. Like I said at the beginning, get started first, and then track these kind of things so that you can see what's working for you and what's not. And now let's talk about, let me take a break and take a sip. And if you guys have questions, post it in the chat room. I'm going to go check right now. Next, we're going to talk about how to do a checkup on the systems that you already have in your business. Yes. And if you have questions, post them in the chat room. Okay, cool. Wow, there are a lot of you here. Hello, all 9 of you. Well, there are even more on the call. Okay, so hello. Checking up. And you know what? Can I just say, like, total side note, I can tell it's been a while since I've talked to you all because I'm talking really fast. And it feels like forever since we've done a class, and I've totally forgot how it, like, feels to sit here at my laptop with the microphone in front of me and just talk to you and not hear anything back. So another sip of tea, and then we'll go on. Okay, so now for nearly all of you that are in the Starship, you have a business that works in some way. It might not work the way you want it to work, and it might not have the profit margins or the number of sales that you would like it to have, but it exists. Yay. So then the question is the structure that you've been working with supporting you towards your where you're at right now and towards the goals that you want to go to? To go back to that picture that I posted of me thinking through, like, how to grow my wholesale orders, what I had to see is it even feasible to make $4,000 in sales of wholesale yarn or not? Like, can I make that much? So I did the math all the way down to how many pots of dye would I have to have going in a day. And in order to do that kind of, like, structural check, we're going to start with math. And the big question with all math is, will it actually work? When you do the numbers based on, like, real-life actual facts that you know, do you get the results that you think you're going to get? And that's – we're starting here because a lot of the businesses that I talk to, not you guys so much, but the people who, like, email me with questions and then I email them back a few more questions to learn more about their business, I'm kind of surprised at how rarely there's been math involved and how rarely the math will actually work in their favor if they go on and, like, take the math to its end point. Like, would this pay me anything being its end point? So here are some numbers. This is some places to start with math. And I'm going to post this in the form, and I might even post my whole notes for the class, even though they're kind of all over the place. So some numbers to start with before you can really do any kind of math is, what are your sales in a month? That includes the total money that you make from your sales in a month and the total number of sales. So let's use my 2,000 number. My $2,000 could be the total number of sales in a month, and it could be 2 orders, or it could be 20 orders. It's good to know both, because that will help you figure out what to plan for in the future. And in fact, on that picture, you can see that I wrote that last month I had $1,000 in wholesale order sales, and that was from 2 shops. So in theory, to get to $4,000 a month, I would only need to sell to 8 shops. That it is if everyone made the same size order as they did in the past, if new people acted the way old people acted, which may or may not be true. So that's why it's important to know those two numbers. And then obviously your business expenses, which nobody wants to think about, but is actually not that hard to figure out once you've done it a few months in a row if you are still buying the same amount of supplies. Once you know how much it costs you to buy supplies, and then things like your website hosting and your business cards and your printing, your labels, your ink cartridges, your shipping, once you know what that all costs, say for $100 worth of product, you can extrapolate what it'll cost for $10,000 worth of product. So you don't have to know, you just have to have like a chunk of it and be able to understand a chunk of it and how that grows as your sales increase. Basically, if you figure out your business expenses for 1 month and then you compare them from 1 month to the next, you'll get a sense of this. So don't stress out. I promise it's okay. The next number to know is your average size of an order. So how many items, like individual skeins of yarn, are in an order? And then also, how much money is the average order? And I keep saying skeins of yarn, but obviously if you sell something intangible, patterns that you design, or like classes that you teach, some of you teach classes, or like editing services, this carries over. How many products are you selling, and how much does your average order total out to be? And then the next number is repeat customers. Do you have them? And if so, can you figure out the percentage of your total orders last month that came from repeat customers? I promise this is simple math. If you need help, we can do it in the forums. Not only what percentage of your total orders were repeat customers, but how often does a repeat customer repeat, right? So in my retail sales of my yarn company, when I sell directly to customers, a huge portion of 2011 sales came from one person. She bought yarn every month. And now I figured out she not only bought yarn every month, but she turned on yarn stores to me and they bought yarn from me. So knowing that is important because, I mean, A, it's great. I want to encourage more than that of that. So I could talk to her and ask her what convinced her to, like, keep being awesome. And I can make sure that I extend that to other people so that they keep being awesome. But then also I need to realize that because if 80% of your income comes from three people, what happens when those three people lose their job or don't start buying from you or lose their internet connection for a month? Like, could you survive without them? And I know Amy's talked about her big client of doom and how she's like, I think part of her like map making goal was to expand her other parts of her business so much that she didn't rely so much on the big client of doom. And that's why you want to know where, you know, if it's repeat customers, if it's new customers, where that's all coming from. I'm going to take a moment because this sounds funny to me. Okay, we're good. So repeat customers, and the next number, and this is, I promise, will be the last one I tell you have to figure out, is how long things take you. And that is how long it takes you to make a product, how long it takes you to label, how long it takes you to ship, et cetera, et cetera. You know, my earbuds keep falling out, but it occurs to me no one else is talking. I don't really need to have them. And I don't mean you have to know the exact numbers. Like, I do not figure out exactly how long it takes me to ship and pack, but I have a general idea. And you know what's weird is everybody just got unmuted. Hold on just 1 second. Okay. Can you guys still hear me? You know, I should probably look in the chat room before I ask a question. Can someone tell me if you can still hear me? Yes, excellent. Okay. Steph said she missed number three, and I will absolutely put this all in a forum post or a document. So the numbers I said to know is your sales in a month, both your total money and your total number, like five sales or 50 sales, your business expenses, your average size of your order. That was number three, Steph. How many items per order and how much money per order. Then repeat customers. And then the last one is how long things take you. And I don't think this you have to have a specific number, but it helps to know if, hey, last month I had 10 sales and I ended up spending about 2 hours a week on shipping. So obviously this month if I had 100 sales, I'm going to need to spend, do I need to spend that much more time on labeling and shipping? Or because I've batched it, will that number not grow greatly? That you figure out over time. But if you don't ever look at it you'd be surprised. And if you get a big order or you have a slow month, you can forget to allow time for that. So those are the numbers to know, and then we're actually going to do some math to figure out if they work. And obviously, you guys aren't going to do the math during the call, but this is math for the future, and this is how you do a systems check to see if your prices work for you, if your profit margins work for you, and if the cost you're spending on expenses is working for you. So obviously, one thing to do is take all of your business income for the month and subtract your business expenses, and then look, is there a profit? Ideally, yes, because if you didn't make very much, hopefully you also did not spend very much. Of course, there are always the expenses that never change. Like, I pay the same amount in hosting whether I make a bunch of sales or zero sales. But things like Etsy fees, you are going to have a bigger Etsy bill in a month when you sold a lot versus a month you didn't sell a lot. So that is the first big systems test. When you do your income and your expenses, is there a profit? And I mean your normal expenses. If you had one month where you bought a Photoshop or a new laptop, that might not be the case. But on a normal month, your normal regular expenses, is there a profit? How I track it is I do everything in PayPal, and I export the PayPal report each month, and then I just, in Excel, you can sort a column by like ascending or descending. I do that, so then all of the negatives together and all the positives together, and I grab all the negatives, which would be my expenses, and I put them in their own page in that same spreadsheet. It's very simple to do. We could totally do a tutorial if that just blew your mind, but if you ever worked in an office and had to use Excel, you know plenty to do your own accounting in this very small way. And even if you give all of your numbers to someone else to do your accounting or bookkeeping, you definitely need to know that there's a profit when you make money and spend money, that you still have a profit. So I like to check this at least every quarter, even though when I do it every month, I'm a much happier person, because it can be really surprising on a month where you had very, very low sales to see, hey, I still made money. And when we did the map making guide and people set money goals, they were actually really surprised to find out because they set money goals, they started tracking their money. And it's amazing, if you haven't been tracking your money, to realize I actually make more in sales than I thought so. Or once I start paying attention to how much I'm making in sales, I'm seeing an increase that I didn't realize was there. And maybe it wasn't there before and it is now because you're paying attention to it. Either way, it mostly cheers you up. That's been my experience on the Starship, that it mostly cheers people up. So then the next little system to check is your production calendar. Like, what is the way you make your product working for you? And a good way of checking this is to ask, what's your goal? If going back to my little example, if you wanted to make $2,000 in a month, how much product would you need to, if you wanted to sell $2,000 in a month, how much product would you need to make at the bare minimum in order to reach that? Obviously, we all make a lot more product than what sells that very day, because if you listed it in an Etsy shop, sometimes it sits there for over a month. But all the same, you still need to be making new product if you want to reach that goal. So what's your goal, like your numerical goal? How much do you want to make? In order to make that much in a month, how many of your products would you have to make in that month, and then divide it by week, and then divide it by day? And it doesn't matter if you have one two-hour time period each week to spend on it, or if you have seven days of eight-hour days to spend on it. That's what's great about this, is it's whatever you are going to spend on it, whatever a day of work is for you, can you make that much product in that time period? This all depends on like you and your product and your production and what it is you're making. So for those of you who are making knitting patterns, obviously your products come out at a much slower pace, right? You can't churn out three patterns in a day from start to finish. You have to knit the item, then you have to write the instructions, and you have to take the pictures, and you have to test and knit it. So if you wanted to make $100 in a month and your products are, or your patterns are $5 a pattern, and you know that you usually get one big bump when you release a pattern, you might decide, well, I want to release a pattern this month, and that's how I'm going to get to my 100. It's going to be mostly new pattern sales. How many patterns can you create in that month? Can you create a new one each month, or is that not in your capacity? And whatever your capacity is great. And I feel like a lot of, you know, I said that I look at a lot of businesses who their numbers don't work out, like their numbers aren't logical, and they say, well, I want to make this much a month in order to quit my day job, but I'm only making 5 products a month, and none are selling. And it's like, well, right, you'd have to make a lot more than that to reach your goal. And the reason I think so many people's numbers are not logical and they haven't thought it through is that they don't want to recognize, they don't want to accept what their capacity is. If you can only make 5 products in a month, or you can only publish 1 knitting pattern every 2 months, that is perfectly fine. That is, like, totally fine. You can structure your business around that. So you focus on selling that one pattern for the next 2 months before you release a new one. It's not that I'm saying, like, you must scale up, you must create more products, you must have a totally, like, streamlined production calendar where you spend 20 hours a day making stuff. The question is really, do your goals match up with your production capacity? And then, if not, what does that mean for what else you do? Does that mean you need to add a product that takes less time? Like, instead of my hand spinning, I can dye some, and I can dye in, like, 5 at a time, and that's a lot quicker than spinning. Or maybe you offer something even smaller, or you offer something much, much bigger that's much more expensive and can sustain you for a much longer time, so, like, during all the time that you make it. So that's part of the reason why we're looking at your production capacity. It's not to say your capacity should be more effective or that you should be making more, but it's to see that if your goals actually line up with what you're capable of making, and if not, then let's brainstorm some ways to get around that. Not pushing yourself to make more, not lowering your goal, but finding some space in between what you can make and what your goal is to get you to that goal. So, for example, Kate's goal was, and I'm like, yeah, she shared it with the Starship, and this is the Starship only class. So I was like, her goal was to make, I think, $1,000 in soap sales or total sales in a month. But if she found that she couldn't make $1,000 worth of soap, then she would have had to come up with some other solution for getting to $1,000 a month. Like, if you just can't make that much soap because of the space that it takes to dry or the time that it takes to cure, then that's a good thing to know. Okay, so enough about the production calendar. Don't forget, when you're thinking about the number of items you need to make in a month in order to reach your goals, your expenses. So with yarn, I can't sell yarn without actually buying the raw supplies, right? Even if I had my own sheep, I would have to feed those sheep, so I'd have that expenses. The more wool I sell, the more wool I have to buy. I think that's true for all of you, except for maybe if you're a pattern writer. But I mean, like with Amy, with your paintings, you have to buy more paint if you make a lot of paintings. And with your pattern designers, you maybe don't have to buy more, like, products the more you make, but your whole cycle is lower. For most of us, though, our expenses go up when our sales go up. So when you're looking at your production calendar, don't forget to add in your expenses to make sure that your goal is actually reachable. So now, another system to check. Ooh, this is a lot of math. Let me just tell you, math's not my thing. I studied French. Not math. But this will reinvigorate whatever is sort of, like, ailing or sad or droopy in your business. Knowing the actual numbers around it, even though we avoid looking at the numbers, knowing the numbers gives you focus. Then you realize, oh my goodness, I've been beating myself up because I couldn't make $2,000 worth of sales, and look, it's because I can't even make enough product to make $2,000 worth of sales. So then you know what new thing to look at. So the next bit of systems math is to check your sales math. And this is where a lot of us focus our energy, because we want to get more sales. We have in mind that at some magical point in the future, we're going to sell a lot more. And if we would just get a bigger audience or make more sales, then we would reach that number where we would be reaching our sales goals. Instead of looking at it like, well, if I just reach more people, I will, like, magically reach this goal. Once you know that your production capacity can reach whatever goal you have, then look at your sales like real figures. So go back 3 or 4 months and look at what she sold. And then how did you do the next month? And then what's the rate of growth between those 2 months? Is it like you've doubled your sales, you've tripled your sales, maybe it's increased 10%. Like you had 100 last month and you have $110 this month. That's awesome. That's the rate of growth. That's good to know. And if you can, I'm going to say chart, but you don't really have to make a chart. Just look at it. Over time, you can see what your rate of growth is, and then you can see when it makes sense for you to reach this goal that you've set. And I'm talking here like you have a specific sales goal in mind. It's okay if you don't. And I meant to say this at the beginning. For like a lot of you, you might say, well, you know, I don't have a sales goal in mind because I already make the money that I need to make from either another side gig or a spouse's income, or I'm not interested in making this my full-time income. It's like none of that matters. You joined the Starship because you wanted to make what you're doing more profitable and more fun and more efficient, and you wouldn't have paid the kind of steep Starship fee if you weren't wanting to invest in your business. So even if your business doesn't, like this part of your business we're talking about, doesn't need to pay all of your bills, having a goal gives you something to work towards so that it's growing. And I know that all of you, when you joined the Starship, when I said, why did you join the Starship, you said, so that my business would grow, to learn what I needed to learn to make my business grow. So even if, like, your goal does not have to be replace my day job salary. It can be make $100 more than I make now, or it can be make enough to go on the vacation I want to go on, or to buy the sewing machine I want to buy. It doesn't matter really what the goal is, as much as the only way to see that your business is growing or improving or becoming more efficient or becoming more, you know, whatever it is that you want it to be, is to have some goal in mind that you're working towards. Which, that's what the map making guide is all about, as you all well know. So the rate of growth. What's the rate of growth? And then you can figure out if this continues in the same way it's been continuing, say an additional 10% each month or 2% or an extra $5 each month, how much could you expect to make in the next month? And at what point would you reach that goal that you had set? And that can be a big wake-up call. It could also show you that you're a lot closer than what you thought you were. Or it can show you that your fantasy has been way out of line with reality. And it doesn't mean you necessarily need to lower your goal. You just need to look at other ways of making that happen. And then the last thing to keep in mind about this whole rate of growth business is that your rate of growth is never a straight line. It's not like you make 10% more every month. I don't know any business who's like that. And part of the reason is that some months you sell in different venues. If you do craft shows, you know, 1 month you might do 2, and another month you might do 0, and another month you might do 4. So your sales would be all over the place in those months. And then you might also make more or less stuff available. 1 month you might list 2 things in your Etsy shop every day, and the next month you only list something every 2 months. So all of those things, you know, 1 month you might have press, and 1 month you might not. When you're thinking about your rate of growth, you kind of want to keep all of that in mind. Some people do this in a really mathematical way where they, each month they chart their sales, and then they also include any dates that special things happened, and they look at their sales on that date. Did it increase after that, not increase after that? I don't have the time to do all that unless I got a bookkeeper. And if I had a bookkeeper, I think it would be lovely for them to look at those kinds of things. But for us at our size of business, just keeping that in mind will help you plan for future months. So if you wanted to have made and saved, let's say, $1,500 for you to go to the beach in July, and that was the goal you're working towards, you know, you can do the math for your production. Could you make enough yarn to make enough money? I keep saying yarn, whatever, crocheted wonderfulness, in order to make that goal by July. Then could you list and sell, like, do your sales rate of growth show that you could make that much? And if not, taking your current tact, then you could look at other things you could do, like you could sell in different venues. You could go and do 3 or 4 craft shows in order to make that money, or you can make way more things available in your shop than you have been before, or you could joint partner with somebody so that you reach their great, big, huge audience in order to reach that goal. So all of these systems checks are to give you different ways of looking at what you need to do next in your business. I'm going to take a break there, and because it was just a lot of math we talked about, and I realized that almost everything I've said has been a question for you to answer. Not a lot of, like, lesson as much as it is, like, okay, so these are the things to think about. And I will include all of these questions in the form, and this class, of course, will be in the library, and I'll put a little doc up there with it in the library. I'm going to look at the chat room and take a sip of tea before we go on. If you have a question, post it now. Oh, good. Steph loves math. Steph, you realize by saying that you love math, we're just all going to send you our math for you to do for us. Okay, so the next little systems check you can do, and this is what I talked about in the forum, is your customer path. So, you know, we've talked about, like, does it work for you and your goals, your production, your rate of growth, all of that. Another check to see if your systems are working is to look at what you want your customers to do and what they actually do. So from this, you need to look at it from your customer's perspective and not yours. So when they land first at your website, what do they do? And actually, you know, Ellie asked this question in the chat room, and we'll go on and get into it. She said, how do you know what your different people do when they come to the site? The best way is Google Analytics. So for starters, Google Analytics can tell you who your referrers are. And that can tell you a lot more than you think. So this person I just did this exploration with, 70% of her traffic came from Google searches. That's crazy. I've never worked with any crafty business who's, well, she's not really a crafty business, but she's a creative business. I've never worked with anybody whose search result traffic was that huge. Everybody in the Starship whose Google Analytics we've, like, looked at or talked about, the majority of their referrers come from Twitter or Facebook or, in other words, they put their link out into the world and people followed that link. That's what it means when people come from Twitter, is that they've met you on Twitter and then they're coming from there, or you tweeted something and it got retweeted, or you tweeted it and they just followed your own link. And so what that tells you is that if your link, your traffic is coming from links you are sending back, then they kind of know you before they land on the page. They, or someone that they trust, knew you and linked to you before they landed on the page. Now, if your traffic is coming from Google searches, then you can assume that the person knows nothing about you. They searched for crocheted Mario Brothers, and they landed on your page. And so they don't know anything about you, and that's okay if all you want them to do is buy a crocheted Mario Brothers. That means all you need to do is tell them everything they need to do for in order to make the purchase. So you want to make sure you have everything on that page. So that's one customer path, is that somebody comes via a Google search, like right to a product page. Another path would be that somebody comes via Twitter and they land up at your blog. The question is, if when they get to your blog, what do they do next? They read it. Do you want them to comment? Do you want them to buy something? Do you want them to click over to your shop in general? Yes, all of that. And so when I talk about things about your customer path, I put those questions in the forum, and if you answer the questions based on what you know from either what people have told you, what you can see on Google Analytics, and like what you've learned from your people, that will give you a good idea of what people are doing, and you can think about what you want them to do. So we talked on the forum a little bit with Reen about how she wants – I really think I'm saying her name right, Reen. She wants to sell less at shows. Right now, she knows that her customer path is they love her booth. They walk up to her at a craft show or a yarn show. They fall in love with her yarn. They buy it. They join her newsletter. She sends them a newsletter, and they come to the next show. Well, if she wants to do less craft shows, then she would want to sort of reroute that path. So maybe they meet her at a craft show, and they've joined her newsletter list, and now – instead of waiting till she comes to see them the next time, they instead go to her website and buy stuff from their website. Or if she wants to have more wholesale orders, she reroutes them to their own yarn shop to ask for her yarn. Or she says, you know, tell me about your favorite yarn shop, and then she reaches out and says, so-and-so, who's a customer of yours, gave me your name, and they'd like you to carry my yarn, And then so you can see, you can reroute your customer path. If the people are coming to you currently from Twitter and they land on a blog post, and then you can see from Google Analytics, and Ellie, how you see where they're going is you can look at customer path. And Diane of CraftyPad actually did a great video tutorial series about how you look at people's paths that they take on your website, what they click on when they're on one page versus what they clicked from to get to your page. I can't think of what it's called. She has a great video on that. I'll link to it. Or if someone wants to put it in the chat right now, that's great. It's at craftypod.com, and then it's under video tutorials. She has a bunch of Google Analytics videos. That's how I learned whatever I know about Google Analytics. And so when you see what they click on next, then you can decide if they're doing what you want them to do or you'd like them to do something else. Perhaps they're clicking away then, and then they're not becoming customers, so that's not really a customer path. But a good way is to ask your customers after they make an order, you know, reply to them right away and say, hey, thanks, I just wondered, how did you find this? And what did you click around to before you decided to make the decision? We covered that. So that's customer path. Making sure that it's obvious, figuring out what it is that they are doing, and then defining for yourself what it is you want them to do, and then rearranging things so that they do them. And I keep referring to your website, but obviously this also applies to if they come to craft shows, if you sell wholesale, if like Katie has an alpaca farm and she sells in a bunch of different ways. If she has been selling alpacas to other alpaca farmers, but now she wants to sell her fiber to fiber artists, she has to redefine a customer path. And that means she might have to change some things on her website to make it easier for fiber artists. Or she just changes the customer path as in she emails with them, she meets them on Twitter, and then she emails with them. Not everything has to happen at your website, even though you want when people come to your website for it to be an effective tool for turning into sales. We're going to talk about that in a future month. I think it's like June that we talk about that. And then the last part of your customer path is deepening the relationship, bringing them back so that they're those fabulous repeat customers. And really most of us, I mean, you can come up with some ideas for ways to deepen that, whether you have a customer-only newsletter that you send them, whether you thank them and you link them to something else you think they'd like, or like with my map making guide, when you buy it and you get a mini course, an email course along with the map making guide. One of the last emails in the email course tells you about the Starship, because if you liked the map making guide, you will probably also like the Starship. And it explains how it's different and how it's the same. And so that is taking what is a customer relationship and just helping them take the next step on the path. So the last thing I want to say is that the path is changing all of the time, because you offer a new product or you shift what you make or you start to focus on a different subject matter or you just discover this new thing you really like to do. And it's easy for our path to stay the same and for us to forget that our people aren't necessarily coming along with us as we do this new whatever, especially if our site or our emails or whatever links them to some old stuff. So that's why I suggest that you look over these systems and double check everything to make sure that it reflects where you're at right now. Obviously, there are way more systems in your business than just this, but these are the ones that I thought we should talk about because they're the ones that most have to do with profit. And before we spend any time getting more eyeballs on your site, before you spend any time increasing your traffic or your audience or your sales numbers, you want to make sure that your sales result in profits and that your traffic results in sales and that the entire thing is sort of a flow to move people you know, where you need them to be and where it'll help your business. That is it for me. I am going to put my earbuds back in and ask if you guys have any questions. You can hit *6 to unmute yourself, or you can post them in the chat room and I will answer them. Okay. Oh, that's somebody. Yes.
Hi, it's Steph.
Hi.
I was wow, I forgot that I had myself on speakerphone. I apologize. I was wondering, when you're talking about how to get people from, if you're changing your revenue stream, such as I used to do a lot of craft shows, like one every weekend for like...
Entry chimes are on. Exit chimes are off.
Craft show humans, and I want them to... go and buy stuff online, and you were saying that you could do that by directing them a certain way to doing that online. The best way that you're suggesting to direct them would be, like, in your newsletter. What if I have another business venture, as so many of us creative entrepreneurs normally do, in that I'm doing, like, consulting or something now, which I kind of... And I know that there's a few creative entrepreneurs that have been signing up for my newsletter just because they thought it was also a consulting newsletter. How do I separate them in a way that makes sense so that I can drive them to click my sales page for my consulting as opposed to hearing about all my nerdity that I make and they're going, what the heck?
Well, I think for starters, a lot of the like crafty entrepreneurs probably also would like what you make, so it wouldn't hurt for them to also be getting those product updates. But probably the people who like your nerdery don't want to hear about your business advice. Like, you know what I mean? So when I was selling Yarn and people kept asking me businessy questions, so I would write blog posts, I literally got emails from people that were like, why are you talking about business? I only want to buy your yarn. So what you can do is you can create a separate list and make it clear that people can sign up for that list. So if you have a blog post that's about businessy topics, you'd then at the bottom of the blog post have a link to that subscriber list. So I would have two lists in MailChimp or whatever you use to manage your newsletter lists. You could even do two whole sites. I mean, obviously I have two whole sites that are kind of distinct. One is just for yarn, one is just for crafty business stuff. But I think that for you, your crafty business people, like, will still totally love, or whatever kind of business people they are, you sell things that appeal to, like, lots of people. So they appeal to me, and I have a business. So I think
The way that you teach appeals to me, and so that's why I was obviously, like, attracted to the way that you handle these situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of the same stuff kind of happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, oh, crap, I need to figure out how to do this smart at the beginning or in the middle, wherever the heck I am, and just make it, separate it. Because when we were doing the Busting the Blogness class, that was one of your feedbacks that when I finally filled out one of the worksheets was that, why are you talking about your Etsy business, like, stuff when really people are coming to your blog for nerdity? And I was like, okay, so I took it off. But now that I've gone and spoken at conferences, everyone's like, well, why isn't it on your blog?
Right.
About your Etsy. And I'm like, oh, balls.
Well, I think, and I remember saying that because I thought that, here's what a lot of crafters do when they start a blog, is that they write about, they're selling only their craft, but they write about the process of building a business, which a lot of people who are buying your craft don't care about. But if you so if you're not selling anything to do with businessy stuff, like, just don't talk about it there. Like, talk about it in the Starship. But you are. So if you are selling that is, you can put it under its own category on your blog. You can have its own, definitely do its own email list, because it takes people a long time. And this kind of goes back to thinking about the customer path, is that it takes people let me say it like this. If I want to buy something that you make, like your glasses, is it cross stitch or embroidery glasses, like geeky glasses? Yeah. I can see it and decide, like, I'm going to buy that. Click, I buy it. I don't have to know you. I don't have to like you. But if I'm going to buy your time and answer questions and pay you to answer my questions, it's going to take some time for me to feel comfortable making that decision. And so a newsletter list is perfect, because then you are I'm getting to know you over time. I can subscribe, kind of forget to go back to your website ever again, but keep hearing from you and keep, like, falling more in love with you until I'm ready to give you my money and ask you my questions. So I definitely make a newsletter list for those people, especially if you don't feel ready to do a whole, like, separate blog. You know, you want some way of communicating with them and communicating your business smarts to them on a regular basis. And, I mean, you could have two totally separate sites, but you don't necessarily have to do that right away.
That sounds perfect.
Okay, and you're welcome. And I think that, you know, if you're writing about both things on your blog, direct in the blog post, direct when you're writing about nerdery, like, direct them to your nerdery things. And when you're writing about business, direct them to your businessy things. And, I mean, that's always a balance. and this, what we try to talk about in the blog class, like, it's always a balance between, like, directing people to your stuff and also actually giving them something interesting to read, you know, so that it's actually,
yeah,
like, they realize that you're smart about this thing. You're not just saying, oh, and buy my consulting if you want to see how smart I am about this thing.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's the answer to most of them. I think all of it. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. And if you have more, you know, ask in the forum or whatever. And also, I got started helping people with their businessy stuff on a private forum I was in with other businessy people who weren't crafty at all, but I would just, like, practice answering their questions when they'd post them. And then I did a few, free, if you have questions, like, I'll answer them on a live Q&A, like this phone call thing, a few times in order to then build up my list. That's the other thing I was going to say. And so I invited just those people to start with, but more people signed up because they told people. And that was how this, like, growing your crafty biz, my email list about that first got started, was I would do free Q&As on the phone. People could ask anything, and I would answer it, you know, really, like, blatantly, honestly. And so that's one way of getting more people to sign up if you haven't been talking to that crowd until now. But you already have. You've been going to these things. You've been speaking. You're an expert already.
I feel like I'm an expert in certain fields, and I'm being asked to teach classes and all these things all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what I wanted to happen, but I don't have anything to refer them to other than what I already have in place. And so I have to change what I already have in place to be able to, I guess, appeal to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But still remain, like, me-like.
Right.
That's where I'm having a difficulty with balancing that, or how to get them from this newsletter to say, oh, if you're a crafty business person, you should totally go over this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and
hard to separate them.
You can flat out send an email to your whole list and say, for the last so many months, I've been leading a double life. I've been, you know, answering your business questions at events, and I've been selling you nerdery at craft shows, and you are all getting the same email. So if you want to keep hearing about nerdery, don't do anything. If you want to hear about, you know, more about businessy stuff, I'm now going to be sending it to you twice a month over here, and then give them a link. And, I mean, you really can, like, it's like hurting them, right? You say, like, go here now, and people will do it.
Okay. Man, that's so good. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad it's helpful. Okay, so I'm looking in the chat room, and it looks like, Okay, I think I updated almost all the links in the library except for the audiobook link. Some people are saying some things are missing. I don't know about the How to Make Money class. I'll have to check on that. I'm sorry if you check a link and it's not there. Okay, but back to the class. Are there more questions? If you can post them in the thing. Okay, I'm going to hang up then. You can ask your questions in the chat room. I'll be there for like another 15 minutes. And thank you all for coming. It's super fun to talk to you on the phone. And I want to talk more about this. Obviously, this stuff never goes away. I mean, like, knowing that you can make enough to reach your monetary goals, or having a profit margin large enough to actually make a profit, is important stuff, and we won't stop talking about it. But as we kind of move forward in the year, we're going to be talking more about, I keep calling it the system of marketing your business, because it's like we're going to go step by step, you know, where you start with one thing, and then you move on to the next, and then you move on to the next, and it all kind of builds on each other, because up until now, the classes have been like, you've asked a question, I've created a class. And while that's great, it doesn't give you the sense that, like, you're building on the thing you did last month. And I think that's what I want for the remainder of Starship, and I hope you all enjoy that too. I'm open to your feedback at any time, as you always know. So thank you, and have a lovely day. I will unmute you all so you can say bye to each other if you would like, except for I might have unmuted you already.
I don't know if I'm still muted.
Yeah, you're all unmuted, so you can say goodbye. Have a great night. Bye-bye.